When one is fully qualified with all these transcendental attributes, and his consciousness is thus completely purified, he is immediately attracted simply by hearing my name or hearing of my transcendental quality. Purport: in the beginning of this instruction, the Lord explained to his mother that madguna shruti matrena, by hearing, matra, simply, gunam, quality.
He certainly, mam, me.
When one is fully qualified with all these transcendental attributes, and his consciousness is thus completely purified, he is immediately attracted simply by hearing my name or hearing of my transcendental quality. Purport: in the beginning of this instruction, the Lord explained to his mother that madguna shruti matrena, simply by hearing of the name, quality, form, etc. of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is immediately attracted. A person becomes fully qualified with all transcendental qualities by following the rules and regulations as recommended in different scriptures. We have developed certain unnecessary qualities by material association, and by following the above process, we become free from that contamination. To develop transcendental qualities, as explained in the previous verse, one must become free from these contaminated qualities. Here the word, or the combination of words, mat dharmanaha, is translated of my devotee. Now, I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but I can venture to guess, and even if the guess is wrong, from the grammatical point of view, from the devotional point of view, it's not wrong, that dharma means that which is intrinsic to a person or object or phenomenon. So intrinsic to Krishna is his devotee. Krishna feels incomplete without his devotee, although he is complete. But Krishna's dharma, the intrinsic quality of Krishna, what is that? Well, he's the greatest. He's God, so he's the greatest. He possesses all opulences in full. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasya shriyaha jnana vairagya yoscha yashannang bhaga itingina. The godness of God is his possessing all opulences in full, namely all wealth, all strength, all knowledge, all fame, all beauty, and all renunciation. So that's what makes him God. But over and above that, as stated in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhurya Bhagavata Sa, the essence of God's being God is his sweetness. So sweetness, that means that's manifested in relationship with his devotee. So just as a king, there's no meaning to be his being a king unless he has a kingdom and subjects. So God's godness means that he has so many devotees to interact with. The idea of impersonalism, that God has no form, God has no name. We may say a name. They say we may worship a deity just to concentrate the mind. Or maybe we may say a name as a help in sadhana to eventually realize that the ultimate has no name, no form. So this is a incorrect, envious notion. Otherwise, there's no meaning of the term God or Bhagavan, Ishvara. There must be others to interact with. So here it says the devotee, here in this verse, word is used twice, guna. first of all referring to the devotee, because the devotee is qualified with all these qualities which have been discussed in the previous verse. Therefore, simply by hearing about Krishna's qualities, he becomes immediately attracted, as he can appreciate. Materialistic persons is there's no use to speak the glories of Krishna before them, because they have no appreciation. Actually, for them it's required to say that you follow or you'll go to hell. For them it's required, because they only understand might makes right. So, and the idea that God is good, they can only appreciate in terms of how he fulfills my desires. And if you don't follow what he says, then you get in trouble. So this is the standard conception of God for persons in the material world. It's suitable for materialistic people. But here it's Lord Kapila Devi speaking about actual devotees who do not approach Krishna out of fear. They do not approach him with material desires to be fulfilled, but they are themselves situated in their own proper dharma of Krishna consciousness. And therefore, the very meaning of being properly situated is that one is automatically attracted by Krishna. Everything else is adharma. Actually, we have in the Shastra that state the Dharma Shastras. You should do this, you should do that. All rules of then there are karma, jnana, yoga, all these things, all these different paths. And it's called Dharma in as much as it leads to dharma. It's meant to lead to actual dharma, which is Krishna consciousness. But actually, without Krishna consciousness, it's actually adharma. Generously, it's called dharma. To make people think, yes, this is good, we're doing something right, we're good. But unless they understand this basic point that we are meant for the service of Krishna, then the purity of consciousness by which one can appreciate Krishna will never arise. The diseased mentality of thinking everything is for me. Shall I worship God or not? Well, what's in it for me? If I worship God, what do I get out of it? I'm feeling peace of mind. I'm chanting Hare Krishna. So many times people says, "Oh, we feel so much anand when we chant Hare Krishna." Oh, all right, but that's not meant for your anand. That generally people think like that. That oh yes, it's so nice. I like it so much. Well, that's good to like being in Krishna consciousness, but real Krishna consciousness begins when we stop thinking about how I shall be happy and Krishna shall be happy by my activities. And then when one has this change of heart, change of consciousness, then one can actually enter, or that is the entrance into Krishna consciousness. That is the complete purification. When we stop thinking Krishna is for me and we start thinking I am for Krishna. And when one's consciousness that I am meant for Krishna becomes highly developed, then instead of thinking I am Krishna's, we think Krishna is mine. Can we? One becomes very advanced. Mother Yashoda thinks Krishna is my dependent child. The gopis think that, oh, Krishna, he is attracted to us. It's true. But then when they became too much thinking like that, then Krishna left them. So this higher level of Krishna consciousness begins with pure attraction to Krishna. One is immediately attracted simply by hearing my name or hearing of my transcendental quality. This, our godbrother, Somaka Maharaj, you know him? He was in Italy. You saw him? So, he passed away about 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. But he recounted that he was in America with his wife. He's from Italy. And he got back to Godhead magazine and he saw the order. You can order these books, so he ordered all the books. What is it? I'm getting mixed up with someone else now. I am getting mixed up. There was someone who he got the books and then he was running. Who was that? There was someone who was studying in London. Now I'm getting mixed up between two people. So he was studying in London. He's not from England. And then he got the books in the post and he went to the post. I had to go to the post office to get them because he was a foreigner. He didn't have a fixed address. So he was reading the books as he was walking and then the bus just missed him. As he was just so absorbed, he didn't realize he was walking in the road. He was walking across the road. And then he just sat and read, and then his wife came home. And he told her, we've got to give up sense gratification and surrender to Krishna. You know, she didn't know what he's talking about. And he said, look, read. And he read it, and she agreed, okay. So they just read the books and read the books all night. And then they looked and saw, where's the addresses of the temple? So there's none in Italy. Okay, we'll go and join in France, because that's, I don't know why, they could have joined in London. But I guess the language is, so they just ran, practically. They ran to the train station, got on the train, got on the ferry, and just non-stop traveled and it felt like Prabhupada's words, he was reading them, he felt like it was bang, 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 give up sense gratification, surrender to Krishna, give up sense gratification, like the Mridanga beat. Tareketa, tareketa. Give up sense gratification, surrender to Krishna. So immediately upon reading that, was attracted. Yes, this is what I have to do. Now we find in our preaching, some people, they immediately take up Krishna consciousness simply by coming in contact. Yes, this is what I need, this is what I want. Others, gradually, slowly, they can come in. Still, even after coming to Krishna consciousness, they maintain doubts and so many material attachments. And others aren't interested at all. So that is the job of a preacher, to try to bring people to become attracted to Krishna. Of course, as I was saying, people are a long way from being attracted to Krishna. And even if they have an idea of God, their idea is of one who is to serve us. So they're a long way from that. There's not really much point to, when you meet people, start talking about Krishna's playing on his flute with a beautiful bending form and all this. It's, people have no concept. They can only think of Krishna as being something mundane. At best, they might think of him as some historical figure. And there's so many theories. The tribal god, Krishna, was worshipped by some tribal people living in the forests. Vrindavan's a forest. And then that... And then the concept of this tribal god got grafted with the Vedic god Vishnu. So many bogus ideas. It's very, very dangerous mixing up with all these bogus scholars, because they're bogus. And they're quite, they make a living out of it. So they're quite expert in word jugglery that Prabhupada used, vag chaturi, word jugglery. But if one can become free from all these contaminations, then one will actually be attracted to Krishna and will become ecstatic in Krishna consciousness. That we were, or you were saying the other night, that especially in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sampradaya, it focuses on the essence. The essence is to go beyond appreciation of God as the Supreme Person, and even further developed than appreciating Him as being very sweet. In Ramanuja Sampradaya, there's so much in the traditional Sampradaya, there's so much appreciation of His sweetness. People like to hear about His pastimes. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually gives the opportunity to enter into that, not simply to hear about it, but to enter into that, into the sweet pastimes of Krishna, which are superlatively ecstatic. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited Mathura, there was one Sanariya Brahmana, he's called. His name is not given. Sanariya means that he's Brahmana, but from a group of Brahmanas who are considered not very good, not very high class Brahmanas. Maybe they do rituals for lower caste people, and therefore they're considered less high caste. Although among Brahmanas you'll find that every Brahmana group thinks that our group is the highest and others are lower. But it's probably there in different Kshatriya groups and Vaishya groups and Shudra groups and Chandala groups also, because that's the nature of the material world. Everyone thinks we are the best. I'm born in England, and that's the proof that England is the greatest country in the world. Right? Of course, those who are born in Slovenia, they probably think Slovenia is the greatest country in the world. And apart from 2 million or so people in the world, everyone else is in Maya because they never heard of Slovenia. So anyway, there was a Sanariya. Let's get back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Sanariya Brahmana. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was engaging in Sankirtan, singing and dancing, and he saw this Brahmana is joining with him. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could understand that he must have some connection with Madhavendra Puri, because Madhavendra Puri was the first one in the world, at least after the departure of Krishna, in this day of Brahma, to exhibit such transcendental symptoms. He is the Premankur, he is the sprout. That means that the love of Krishna was there always it's there latent in all the Shastra. But Madhavendra Puri actually manifested that. The highest level of love of Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could appreciate that this person, he must have some connection with him. Otherwise, how could he have such symptoms? It doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't come just by chance. Neither the universe comes into being by chance, nor does love of Krishna come into being by chance. So then he explained, Yes, I am a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. When he came to Mathura, he initiated me. Similarly, when Gadadhar Pandit was invited to see a Vaishnava, Mukunda Datta was from Chattagram in the easternmost part of Bengal, and Pundarik Vidyanidhi was from there also. So he came to Navadvip, but he didn't mix with the Vaishnav. He was hidden, at that time not known among the Vaishnavs. So Mukunda Datta, knowing that he was a great Vaishnav, invited Gadadhar Pandit, would you like to come with me and see a Vaishnav, someone you didn't meet before? He said, yes, certainly I'd like to. And then Gadadhar, who was a very strict, rigid brahmachari since his appearance in this world, saw this Pundarik Vidyanidhi looks like a great sense enjoyer, sitting on an opulent bed, being fanned by servants with this chewing pan, with a silver spittoon. So Gadadhar had some doubt in his mind. Vaishnav should be very renounced. It doesn't look like a Vaishnav, it looks like a big sense enjoyer. So Mukunda, understanding that, sung in Mukunda's famous, in his sweet voice, the verse from Bhagavatam. Where is that? Aho Bhaki Stanakala Kuta. This verse, how Krishna is so merciful. King Vadayalu, who is there more merciful than he who awarded to Putana, who had the intention to kill him, the position of his wet nurse, Dhatri. So on hearing this, Pundarik Vidyanidhi became ecstatic in love of Krishna and was uncontrollably mad and running here and there and shouting out. So this is attraction, immediately became attracted by hearing, having that reminder of Krishna's mercy and his pastimes. So this is pure love of Krishna, immediate attraction to Krishna. However, we don't see that our recent acharyas would do that. They would accuse Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he's just a jnani. Not like us, we Babajis, we roll in the dust and just recently in connection with my research on different upper sampradayas that I was reading about one Westerner had been with some Babajis in Vrindavan and he was impressed with their ecstasy in kirtan, that some of them would start crying and this and that, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he discounted it. He didn't accept that they're properly situated devotees at all. So how is that? Something changed in the sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Nothing changed in the pure sampradaya. But what happened is that people started imitating the symptoms. And instead of having real ecstasy, they just make a show of ecstasy, and people thought that this is bhakti. So we find that also with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he met Ramananda Rai first on the bank of the Godavari, he exhibited ecstatic symptoms. That was his natural reaction to embracing Ramananda Rai. But then he saw that with Ramananda Rai there were so many attendants who had not the slightest understanding of what was going on. It was just, they couldn't work it out at all. They were accompanying Ramananda Rai as he went to take his bath. He was almost on the status of a king. He was the governor of that whole area of southern India under Prataparudra Maharaj, who was the king, whose capital was in Cuttack. So he was representative of the king. So even when he went to take a bath in the river, or brahmanas came and they were chanting mantras, although from the strict caste point of view, he was a Shudra. He was actually a Kayastha, which means they're highly intelligent and qualified, but somehow because they don't fit into Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya, they're classified as Shudra. So they saw a Brahmana. Brahmana means there are not many Brahmanas. So he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are not many sannyasis, and he's a sannyasi, and sannyasi means from Brahmana caste, and even among Brahmanas, most exalted. So ordinary Brahmanas don't go around touching Shudras, let alone embracing them. What to speak of a sannyasi? We'll find even now that in the traditional sampradayas, they're quite strict about what the sannyasis do, and when they go here and there, they'll go with a whole group of people, and you can't get close to them, and they can't touch anyone. Of course, we find that when Shankaracharya was in Banaras, he just came from bathing in the Ganga, and one chandal with dogs blocked his way. So Shankaracharya said, "Get out! You should get out of the way." And so the chandal said, "Well, what do you mean by you? Are you referring to the body, or what are you referring to? You don't expect a chandal to speak big philosophy." And then Shankaracharya could understand that this person is self-realized. He's actually Lord Shiva come to test him, although Shankaracharya is also Lord Shiva. So anyway, the point is that he wanted him to get out of the way because he's untouchable. But then if you're self-realized and you see everything as one, then what's touchable and what's untouchable? You bathe in the Ganga, anyway, a sannyasi is pure, and then you bathe in the Ganga, and then you become more pure, or whatever. But then you see a chandal, and you don't even want to see him, let alone touch him. But the so-called chandal pointed out that this is, if you're self-realized, then you should be open to everything. And that was, that this idea was taken up by Swami Vivekananda, as he's called in Bengal, who said that, well, he gave this, so he was once in Mathura area walking along the road, and he saw a chandal smoking with his hookah. You know what that? Hubble bubble. And he thought, well, I'd like to smoke also. But he walked and said, no, I can't smoke from a chandal's hookah. And he thought, wait, I shouldn't think like that. I'm a sannyasi. So he went back and said, hey, let me smoke from there. He said, no, no, I can't give it to you. You're a sannyasi. He said, no, anyway, give it to me. So he showed his non-caste discrimination like that. And also, when he was in America, he described how he was sitting for a meal, and the hosts, they offered meat, and he said, no, I can't take, I'm a sannyasi. And said, well, why not? It's all one, it's all the same. What difference is made to him? He said, they're right. So he took the meat also. And so many. And then he came up with the theory that, well, it doesn't matter what you eat. Why make so much propaganda about what you eat? It's just, what matters is your consciousness. So you can eat anything, as long as the main thing is to have good consciousness. So anyway, we're not promoting Vivekananda's ideas here, or anywhere, at any time, or in any place, in any circumstances. But we're just talking about some misconceptions. So the Brahmanas accompanying Ramananda Roy, he couldn't understand what's going on here. There's this sannyasi, he's embracing a Shudra, and he's crying and showing it. They couldn't understand its ecstatic symptoms. They had no idea of any such thing. They just couldn't work it out at all. What is going on? They're completely bewildered. They couldn't relate to it at all. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu restrained himself and he showed outwardly grave behavior so that people not misunderstand. The preacher has to act in a way that people don't misunderstand. A devotee acts for the pleasure of Krishna and he doesn't care what other people think. A devotee has to act for the pleasure of Krishna. He doesn't care what other people think. That verse is there. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ivang sabrata priyanama kirtya yata anuraga chitta juta chitta uchai asatyati rodati gayati ummadava nuchati lokabhayaha. That when one is situated in pure love of Krishna, that he dances, he laughs, he chants, he sings the name of his dear Lord, not caring for outsiders, whatever they think. But a preacher has to care what people think because he's trying to change the way they think. Instead of being attracted to my own, what's suitable for my own sense gratification, we have to become attracted to Krishna. So, if he becomes too much distanced from or non-devotees, or if they distrust him, then it's very difficult to preach. It's difficult to get them to even begin to listen in the first place. So where's the balance between this? So sometimes devotees say, well, then we should be more like normal people. Then they'll find it easier to relate to us. The problem is that if you become like a normal person, then you become yourself a non-devotee. Because normal means non-devotee. We're trying to change them to be devotees. So the answer is not that we change to become like them. The thing is that they should become like us. That's what Prabhupada said. That we don't care for public opinion. If the public don't like, we should change them to be like us rather than change us to be like them. But there has to be some meeting point. There has to be some communication at some point. Otherwise, where's the preacher? We find that Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was extremely uncompromising. Practically, unless someone is a completely sincere devotee, prepared to, from the beginning, follow as strictly as he himself, he's Sakshat Vairagya Murti. He's the very form of renunciation, then he rejected as being bogus. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur made some concession or some, he adopted some means to, so that they could communicate with people. His devotees were dressed as devotees, but they lived in himself. Although he lived at the Jogpit or Brajpatan, he lived just like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, extremely austerely, just chanting day and night for over 9 years. But then after that, he took sannyas and then founded the Chaitanya Mart, and then after that, the Sri Gauriya Mart. He lived in well-appointed quarters. So it seems that after taking sannyas, he became less renounced. It looks like that, doesn't it? He would go in cars and trains. But he did that just to bring the message of Krishna consciousness to others. So it's not that he wholesale compromised, and his message was extremely strong. So that point is there, that even though they made themselves more socially accessible to the people in general, they didn't compromise the message at all. Although Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur would present the message in a way in which people, they would have to, or they would automatically understand that this person's far more intelligent than I am. No one could deny that. So that automatically impressed them. So we find also in our ISKCON today, if we find devotees who they're well organized and they have nice presentations and everything runs smoothly, people are impressed. People notice if everything is very clean and nice, they notice that. And if it's all messy, they also notice that. And they're either impressed or unimpressed. That automatically impressed them. So we find also in our ISKCON today, if we find devotees who they're well organized and they have nice presentations and everything runs smoothly, people are impressed. People notice if everything is very clean and nice, they notice that. And if it's all messy, they also notice that. And they're either impressed or unimpressed. So, of course, we should, anyway, devotee keeps things clean, and he's sattvic, and does for the pleasure of Krishna, keeps his temple clean and tidy. Actually, if one is simply a devotee, that in itself is impressive, and if he presents Krishna, then Krishna is impressive. So it's not that we have to, it's not that we should be too much concerned with making all different kinds of gimmicks, although we should, as Prabhupada said, we should rack our brains to think how to spread Krishna consciousness, how to present. But the subject matter is here, the guna, the quality of Krishna, that should be presented. People are not automatically attracted. But if they are repeatedly exposed to the subject matter of Krishna, then things start happening. We see that all over the world. When people are exposed to the books of Prabhupada, Harinam, Prasad distribution, festivals, even just seeing devotees walking in the street, and gradually something happens. In some places it happens quicker than others. In places where they're extremely impersonalistic, in Japan, for instance, it's hard, slow work. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he himself said he had a difficult time in Varanasi, where they're so impersonalistic. So he had to adopt some special techniques there to get through the deep impersonalism. He discussed with them, but when he met the Mayavadi Sanyasi, first of all, he avoided them, so that attracted their attention also. But they were just blaspheming him. Then when he came into their assembly, they're all sitting, he sat down in the contaminated place and showed his humility. They were surprised because Mayavadi sannyasis, they're very puffed up. And if a sannyasi should act humbly, that's amazing to them. So he ingratiated them by acting humbly toward them, saying, "No, you're from a better sampradaya than me. Ami hoi hin sampradaya. Tomar Shange Bosheti Amina Joa. I'm from a lower sampradaya. I'm not fit to sit with all of you. But then he showed his Aishwarya Prakash, his opulence. They're all sitting there thinking, I'm Narayan. I am Narayana. He showed he's actually Narayana. So that impressed them also. But still, okay, well, he's Narayana. And I'm also Narayana. So then they had some discussion. But he attracted their attention by some. By the discussion, he defeated them. And they accepted defeat, which is an advantage over the present day when people, for a start, most people can't discuss because their way of thinking is so illogical that most people, you can't even discuss philosophically with them. It's this neo-mayavad that's being spread of just, you know, it's all just the feelings and what's in your heart and so many bogus ideas. You shouldn't accept any instruction from anyone. And this, what is this? This Krishnamurti. You don't accept any instruction from anyone. That was his instruction. And then his idea was that, well, you shouldn't have any preconceived ideas. You should be free from all influences of whatever other people say to you. You should just be completely in contact with your own inner being. It's just completely bogus. Because no one's free from the influences of different... And even he's telling you, then he's an outside source also. So there's no such thing as being freed from any preconceived notions. So all this, by this neo-mayavad, people, they can't even have any logical discussion whatsoever. They're not accustomed to it. Modern education is just like to make you a moron, that's all. An educated moron who is good at maybe doing some technical things, but to actually think clearly about our existential position. They never approached that. They never had any idea of that in the educational system, and they covered your consciousness with so many other things that propensity, which is quite common in children, to ask, to start thinking, what's life all about, and it becomes completely covered over by education, so much so that even if you try to speak with people about this, they're just so dull-headed that they can't even begin to think about it. And then even if you try to discuss and you just completely defeat their points, and they can't even understand that they're defeated because they're so stupid. And they just bring out another point, another point, another point. And sometimes you find people they're really stupid. I remember saying once to someone about... I gave the example of people without transcendental knowledge, they're like blind. And he said, well, what's wrong with blind people? What have you got against? Why are you discriminating against them? It's just so... I was trying to give the example of the dry... So there was someone else. I know, after I didn't speak anymore with that person. And there was the example of the car and the driver. And he said, you're supposed to be sadhus. What are you interested in cars for? It is so stupid. It's just unbelievably stupid. So at least the Mayavadis in Benares, they could understand we have been defeated. At least they could understand that. And they accepted what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to say. But in the modern age, people are extremely dull-headed. Anyone ever notice that? So giving this chanting of Hare Krishna and giving these books is actually to awaken the real intelligence by which Krishna can be understood. These books, I mean, they're actually on a level far higher than people are up to. And sometimes our devotees say that, well, we should distribute some easier things that people could understand, but you know, how simple are you going to make it? How low are you going to go? How low should you go? It's a great mercy to give these books, but to understand, to enter into them, one has to become purified. Practically, one has to associate with devotees. There are people who read the books and become devotees. Just like I was saying, this devotee who was getting mixed up with someone. Maybe it was Somaka, I don't know. You know, just because he was in the mafia doesn't mean he couldn't go to London. He could have gone there also. Or maybe he wasn't in the mafia, maybe, I don't know. So, but generally this preaching Krishna consciousness, so much has to be done to bring people in. We have to hold festivals and build temples so people can come out. You know what they're thinking when they come to the temple. All kinds of Mayavadis probably doesn't mean he couldn't go to London. He could have gone there also. Or maybe he wasn't in the mafia, maybe, I don't know. So, but generally this preaching Krishna consciousness, so much has to be done to bring people in. We have to hold festivals and build temples so people can come out. You know what they're thinking when they come to the temple. All kinds of Mayavadis propagate all kinds of weird ideas that, well, the statue becomes very powerful because so many people offer prayers, and then the statue acquires, you know, all the energy goes into the statue and it reflects back. So many bogus ideas. But for all these temples and festivals and preaching, if people, they can give some, they can begin to think that yes, these books are very important and we should try to understand them, that will be very helpful for them. That's why again and again we have to stress that our Krishna conscious movement is based on these books. There are many books being written, should be many books being written, but the basis of this movement is these books, these shastras. You can't make up a shastra. That is the upper sampradayas. They all make up. Well, some of them try to base themselves on the teachings of shastra by twisting it. And others, not having any basis in shastra, they just make up a new shastra. That's all. So we have, you know, the Vachanamrit in Gujarat. You must have heard of that, right? In Swaminarayan Sampradaya, Vachanamrit. His Shiksha Patri is okay. He says to the Sahajanand Swami, says to worship Radha Krishna. But in Vachanamrit, they make him out to be God. And there are so many. They make up their own books. What is it? The Rama Krishna Katamrita or something like that it's called. They just make up their own book. In Oriya, this Jagannath Das translated the Srimad Bhagavatam, but he just added a few chapters of his own invention. We have also this Nityananda Charitamrita, which is taken from Chaitanya Bhagavat, the chapters about Nityananda Prabhu, with a few chapters added. Someone made it up and they published it in the name of Vrindavan Das Thakur. And our devotees are so foolish, they think, oh, it's really nectar. It's made up by the Nityananda Vamsa Goswamis to propagate their idea that they are the real gurus because they're descended from Nityananda. Similarly, Advaita Vamsa, they invented the Advaita Prakash, another popular book in ISKCON. So it's the same point, our devotees, that because they're not fixed in Shastra, even they may read it, but somehow they didn't, I don't know. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Kuriya Aika Anakuriya Mani Asha. For those in whom this doesn't happen, for those who are interested in the sense gratification of enjoying hearing the nectar about Krishna, even if it's totally bogus and it's not nectar at all, then for them they're easily cheated, and they just accept whatever appeals to them. They say, oh, sounds very nice, sounds wonderful, so it must be very good. That means they still didn't get the point that it's not if it sounds good to me that it's acceptable. That has to be certified by the acharyas who have the actual transcendental understanding, clear philosophical understanding that comes from the complete identification of acting wholly and solely for the pleasure of Krishna. That is the meaning of an acharya. He's completely dedicated to the principle of satisfying Krishna, and he knows what Krishna wants and can establish that on the basis of Shastra. It's not that what Krishna wants the acharya knows, so you just accept the acharya. But acharya and Shastra, there's no difference. Just that the acharya, he knows what is the actual message of Shastra, so he can say this is the essence of Shastra. Priti vite ache jatanagara digram achahai bemana. He knows that. And then again in Shastra, don't cross the ocean. So which one should we take? Don't cross the ocean if you don't have the strength, if you're going to become contaminated. But if you're so powerful that you can decontaminate the people on the other side and give them Krishna consciousness, then you should go. That injunction, don't cross the ocean, that's good for those who are weak, which means most people. That order is there, that should be followed by most people. But for those who are weak, they should follow. But for those who are strong, they should cross. So the acharyas, they're fully conversant with the essence of Shastra. Therefore, they can impart that to others. Another point here in the purport, that we have to follow the rules and regulations as recommended in different scriptures. Of course, the Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami have collected from different scriptures. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipuno Sadharma Samsthapako. They collected from different scriptures, all different rules and regulations, and the composed books which guide the Gauriya Vaishnavas. So these should be followed. One disciple was saying to me, well, I don't want to be like a robot following all these rules and regulations. And then again someone else was saying that, well, following the rules and regulations, that makes you, if you're too strict, it makes you hard-hearted. You don't become, by following the rules and regulations, it's not that you become a robot, because one of the rules and regulations is that everything should be done with great love. But you follow the rules and regulations for the sake of satisfying Krishna, because the rules and regulations, they teach us to act in a way that's pleasing to Krishna. For instance, it's said that one should engage in sankirtan. So I don't want to follow rules, I'm a robot. So you don't follow, you don't do sankirtan, and you don't please Krishna. So these rules are required because we are robots of Maya. I don't want to be a robot, I'll just do what I like. You don't want to do what you like. No one does what they like. We're controlled by, either we're controlled by our senses, or we agree to be controlled by Shastra. And that means disciple. Disciple means one who accepts the Shashan, the discipline. And why become a disciple? And then afterwards say, I don't want to follow all this. Then rascal, why did you become a so-called disciple? So the rules and regulations are required, and then following strictly makes you hard-hearted. Well, that's possible if one is niyamagraha, one is too eager to follow the rules and regulations just for the sake of following them. But if one follows them strictly for the sake of satisfying Krishna, that doesn't make one's hard-hearted, that makes one soft-hearted. And if one doesn't follow the rules and regulations strictly, thinking that I've got a better way to satisfy Krishna, or you're not very interested in satisfying Krishna, and which is why usually people don't want to follow, they offer this argument, then you remain hard-hearted because of your material attachments. That's what makes the heart hard-hearted. Material attachments, not following the rules and regulations of devotional service, which engage us in activities like hearing about Krishna, accepting Krishna prasad, associating with devotees, which makes our heart soft-hearted. But people, they have this sentimental idea that bhakti means you just embrace others and say a few sweet words, and then you don't have to follow anything, or you just follow what you like, and that's real bhakti. That's so sweet, but it's just all sentimentalism. First you follow, then if you all this you can do. But first we should follow. Otherwise, what's the meaning? I've seen so many sahajiyas, they embrace and they cry and this and that, but they don't follow any rules and regulations. What's the point? So we're not saying that one should be rigid and like a robot or a rock. Although actually it's said that in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Raghunath Das Goswami's regulative principles were like lines drawn in a stone. He was so strict. You want to say he was hard-hearted or what? So, there are so many misconceptions. So many. Therefore, sadhu shastra. What is that? Shastra, sadhu guru vakya, chitete kriya aikya. Should fix that up with our hearts. So we become to the stage of being attracted by Krishna, our natural dharma of being attracted by Krishna. Any question about this? Got your hand, you had your hand on your mouth, you should go wash it immediately. You didn't read that book, My Memories of Srila Prabhupada? You remember that? Little baby had his hand in his mouth, and Prabhupada immediately, take him out, wash his hand. Alright, Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki jai. You may wonder why I'm saying the same point more or less again and again. Well, I guess I need a lot of preaching too. I need to preach to myself.